Mr. Gay, one gray, real nice. Mr. Gay, did the occupants have to register themselves or did the head come to the house to register themselves?
It all depended upon the system the head adopted. If he had a lot of assistance, the assistance would help him. But I suppose in my case, they knew me so well, and in some cases, the street was so short, and everybody knew everybody. They said, oh, so and so, you know, he has got a wife and so many children. That's all, and just very, very unlikely that they would come and bother.
Did you have any idea how they were selected?
That I didn't. I didn't have an idea.
Who were the people in your area who were in charge of this?
In fact, I didn't know him quite so well, you know. I've forgotten his name, actually. You know that he's a one-star man, and then higher up we have two stars, and higher up we have three stars. Not stars, if you're doing what kind, such a kind of flower-like thing, you know. It's just like the Japanese system of the, you know, the police system, no? That they're using now. What do you call it, huh? Yeah, they're using here.
Mr. Gay, did you know where was the post of this one-star man, or the headquarters of the three-star man?
No, they stayed in their own house. I don't know, they must have reported to the local police station every now and then if there was anything wrong. Otherwise, actually, there was nothing exciting for them to do. And as far as Singapore was concerned, I think there was nothing much.
What were your attitudes and your neighbors' attitudes towards this one-star man and two-star man and three-star man?
Well, we, in some cases, I believe some of them were disliked very much because it was quite obvious that they did get certain privileges, but others were doing their duty out of pressure and did not take advantage of it. So we quite understood the whole situation. It depended on the individual carrying out the duty. You know, some people could be very overbearing the moment you gave them the authority. And of course, such people, when the British came back, they had justice meted out to them in one way or other.
Did you know of anyone who approached these people for help?
Yes, some of them did help to be liaison between the ordinary people who had complaints and the authority. But that seldom occurred. The matter might be brought up through them to the social welfare department, but usually the social welfare department was quite approachable. Mr. Shinozaki was quite open-minded, and the city hall was quite open. And there is a channel through the members of the Chinese Chamber of Commerce or the Chinese Association, which of course was doing its very best to not to cooperate with the Japanese, but they knew that the best way to get along with the Japanese was to do what they asked you to do, and not to be too stubborn with them. No use trying to fight against their wishes. And so the Chinese Association, I think, did donate quite a lot of money, and carried out welfare work, for knowing that by doing so they were also helping the Chinese, who were the greatest sufferers.
Do you remember any incidents in your area regarding these one-star people?
No, not that I know of.
Were there any kind of compulsory labor for people, or did you have to do duties such as night patrolling during that time?
No, for people like teachers, we were never asked to do that sort of thing. I don't know about the others.
There were no night patrolling at your area?
No, I don't think so. You must remember I was it was during the first half. I stayed in the first 1.5 years, 2 years of the Japanese occupation. After that, I went to Andang for the last 2 years.
Just now you mentioned the Chinese Association. Did you know anything about its organization or its structure?
No, I know Mr. Lim Boon Keng and Yap Ping Gek and Lee Chun Seng, all these bankers and rich people. They were the people who were the contour of the overseas Chinese banking money. And in fact, according to Mr. Yap Ping Gek, Lee Chor Yaw and so on, all they were very young people at that time. And Tan Kim Chiang, who just died, and I know these people personally, actually. And they were the people who actually organized and promised to finance the Endow project. Without their backing and their money, the Endow project would not have come into being.
What were their roles in the association?
What association?
The Chinese Association.
I have no idea. They are largely a business organization, actually, banking and finance of business, big business, trading and so on for Singapore. And at that time, you must remember, most businesses were in the hands of the British. And but the Chinese did the bulk of the business, although business transactions were done in English. And people like Mr. Yap Ping Gek, who knew English, managed affairs for them by being their secretaries.
Those people who were helping out in the Chinese Association, were they working elsewhere as well?
At one time, Mr. Yap Ping Gek was a teacher. Mm-hmm. Was a teacher, and he was pulled into the banking and business by these people to help them. Quite a number of English educated people were pulled in at that time. But they formed the very powerful influence during that period in ameliorating the bitterness and the ill effects of the Japanese occupation. Without them, without the way they use their influence and the power of their finance and the understanding of the Japanese character, things might have been worse.
Did you know in what ways did these people help the local people?
I suppose you organize the supply of the most important, the basic commodity, rice, I suppose, and sugar and such things, the basic foods. And when there was a sign of danger, the idea of supporting the evacuation scheme, of getting the people out of Singapore, and supporting Mr. Shinozaki, who was the head of the welfare, and he did a lot to make Singapore a place where the suffering was, I think, much less than perhaps in other places, considering the fact that the majority of the people were Chinese.
Can you give examples of how people were helped by this Chinese association during that time? Did you know of anyone who was helped by the association?
I cannot give any really examples of organizations and such things, but as far as the welfare of the people, things were going on pretty well until the Japanese themselves were not doing very well in the war. See? So obviously when the conquerors themselves were not doing very well, and they had to take away what should be used by us, we would be deprived. Eh? So they couldn't do very much. But as far as possible, they did their very best to delay the shortages and the deprivation as much as possible.
Did you know when this association was formed?
No, it has been there all the time, Chinese people, business group. Only later then it became the Overseas Chinese, as they call themselves, the Overseas Chinese Association, from which comes the Overseas Chinese Banking Corporation and so on, Overseas Chinese Chamber of Commerce. All these are branches that came out of this big association.
This Overseas Chinese Association was started during the Japanese occupation times.
I think they really formed into a cohesive, more cohesive group. They're all doing business together without thinking of joining into a cohesive group until that moment. They thought we better join together into a force. Most probably that was it, but there was always the kind of group. There was.
You're saying that they came together of their own, not because the Japanese started the...
No, the Japanese didn't start it. They just came together of their own. Then we had all the people like this, Tan Lak Sai, all these people, all coming together, Li Kong Chian, all these magnates and... or tycoons, rubber tycoons, and so on. All these people, they just came together and millionaires, yeah, the millionaire clubs, yeah, the millionaire this, millionaire that. Yeah. In fact, I myself did go once or twice to the clubs to see how they played mahjong and so on, just to stand around, you know.
What club was it?
At Tanjung Rhu, some of the clubs and so on, very exclusive, you know? Very high class, very exclusive, where they relax, enjoy themselves.
What were your attitudes and other people's attitudes towards the Overseas Chinese Association and what they were doing?
Oh, the Chinese, they always respect the people who succeed. The Chinese people respect people who succeed and make money. You are successful out of your own ability, you have made money. You have not hurt anybody, you have not swindled anybody, you have not cheated anybody, you have not dealt in any drugs or anything that has hurt or destroyed anybody. So it's fair and square. You've done everything in business. You've become rich through your own efforts. In fact, some of these millionaires, I was told, when they first came to Singapore, they came with practically nothing. When I went to sit with them to listen to their talks, just on the outside ring, you know, I could hear them saying, when they first came to Singapore, they just came with a bundle of clothes and a few cents in their pockets. Chinese cents, you know, with a hole in the center. That's all. And some even carried bags of rice at both key, as a, working as a coolie.
This group of people that was functioning during the Japanese occupation, did you know how they start the whole thing? And how did the whole thing get started?
No,
how did they come together?
I have no idea. First of all, they were all known for their philanthropy already, and you see, they knew that there was something afoot, that rations were becoming short, that evacuation was inevitable. Otherwise, Singapore might face starvation. So, and actually Mr. Shinobuzaki received an order from High Command to evacuate around about 300,000 to half a million people from Singapore. And he had to carry that out. And when the Chinese heard about that, these people started to get worried. We must get our people out to a place where they really can live. But to get the people out of this place, we don't want to send them to somewhere where they are sure to perish or suffer. So they started planning. That's how I suppose they have come together.
Did you know who were the other community leaders during this time, besides the Chinese community?
There were the Eurasians and so on, but they formed another section. And they sent the group to Bahau, not Andau. That I know nothing about. The Eurasians did form another group, because they heard about the success of Andau. At first, being in the minority, they did not think that it was so necessary for them to be away. As I said already, the Chinese had always been the arch enemy of the Japanese, because the Chinese, Japanese had been fighting the Chinese for a long time, and even when coming to Singapore, the Chinese, the last force that fought the Japanese, the Dao force, the volunteer force that was formed very quickly, fought them and put up a last stand when the Australian and British forces ran away, and put a very, very determined fight, made the Japanese pretty angry. So if they wanted to venge their anger, they would venge their anger on the Chinese first, not on the Eurasians or the Malays, least of all. Therefore, they waited. And when they saw that the Chinese settlement in Andao was proving to be quite successful, they thought it might be a good idea to send their own people to Andao, to their own settlement, which was to be named Bahao.
Did you know who were their leaders in Singapore?
I have no idea.
How was relationship like between the among the various communities in Singapore at that time?
Well, as I said already, in times of adversity, and we being subjugated people, we forgot most of our differences. And we did, to a large extent, share certain things, except perhaps food and certain possessions. But air shelters and things that can protect life and so on during a raid and that kind of thing, we shared with each other during the war.
Even during Japanese occupation times?
You were quite cooperative. I mean, not too bad. We did help each other. And we did small businesses, like I sell curry and rice, you buy curry and rice from me, you see? And you sell something else, I buy something from you. And that sort of thing, we barter or we sell and buy.
In the beginning, how did the Japanese restore the essential services and law and order when they have just came into Singapore?
They recalled the civil servants and just continued the same departments, the PUB, PWD and so on, the same. Whoever was willing to go back to work and whoever survived went back to work. Of course, for the sake of the wages and salaries, the people went happily back to work. And later the tenting offer extra rice, as I said, he offered me extra rice to work with the broadcasting people and so on, that kind of thing. Sugar and rice were the very attractive offers.
How did the Japanese authorities try to communicate with the local people?
They had a newspaper, you know. You had that in the exhibition, didn't you? What was it called? Shonan Shimbun. Now, those were written by local people, but editors were obviously Japanese who also knew English, and the news and the things, the messages and notices to be printed were edited and written by local people for us all to read. So we would buy these papers and read them, and sometimes we had notices posted up in public places. Paper was very short, you see. So not much otherwise. And by word of mouth, a rumor carried a long way. You just tell one person that the Japanese wanted to do this, and very soon everybody would know about it and do what was required.
What about your daily necessities like rice and sugar and all that? How did you get them?
Now we, I think we got our ration cards. Then I think my wife would know more, you know, because we sort of separate our duties somewhat. Because she did buy extra rice to make curry and rice to sell, and then of course there's always the black market. And women in those days were very clever in this black market business. They would sell and buy sarongs, they would exchange things, and so on and so forth. And I would look out even for gramophone needles. Very strange, you know. Anything that could be changed for anything. So silly to think that such things as gramophone needles, which we would never think of using, could be of value. And yet, today you buy gramophone needles for $10, in a week's time you could sell the thing for $15 perhaps, and make a profit of $5. That's how it goes on.
During the Japanese occupation period?
Yes.
Do you remember whether there was any kind of registration for getting the food?
I think later there might be. Early when they were available, I don't know, I don't think so. But the prices, they had to put down control prices and such. But later the thing, we had to register the number in the family and so on, and get the amount that we were entitled to.
Were you the one who went to register your family, and were you the one who collected all these things, food stuff, such as rice, for your family?
No, I don't think so.
Your wife was the one who did
it? I think my, as far as food is concerned and feeding the family, you ask her.
What about other aspects of life under the Japanese during that time? Were there any form of recreation, entertainment?
As I said already, radio, we had to monitor our radio to local stations, and for certain wavelengths, our radio will be sealed, and those seals must not be broken. And because of that, I preferred to destroy my radio set. Many people preferred to destroy a radio set and said that they did not possess a radio. Because by accident, you might break your seal, you see, and get into very, very serious trouble for listening to foreign broadcast voice of America or BBC. And cinema, well, nobody had time actually to go to cinema. And there were certain cinemas, I suppose. And games, as I said, basketball, volleyball, played until they were threadbare. And wherever there was football field, bumpy or not, people would play and use up their energy. But that, even that fizzled out because there was not the food to give them the energy to play. Yeah? And the black market was thriving. Everybody was busy trying to make money. And the night